It sounds no less ridiculous on that basis to ask Ted Lefroy the question, what can our rabbits teach two of the world's richest men? Hello, Ted Lefroy.
Morning, Rick.
From the Centre of Environment at UTAS. So what have our rabbits got to teach Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates?
Okay, well, earlier this month, two press releases came out in the same week. One was announcing the release of a new Khaleesi virus, and the other was announcing the projects in the first of the Chan Zuckerberg Challenge, which is a big new medical initiative.
Let's talk a bit about the initiative, because most people will have heard about the Khaleesi virus.
Yeah.
Version one. Yeah. Heard about it on the news last week. We did talk about it a little bit. So we're across Khaleesi, which is also weirdly the name of Dragon Lady from Game of Thrones, but I won't get too involved in that. What's this funding for? How substantial is it?
$3 billion that was promised to cure or prevent disease in our children's lifetime. And this is Mark Zuckerberg and his partner, Priscilla Chan.
Okay.
And the first of their, I think it's a $50 million, the first tranche of that funding was was announced. It's an exciting opportunity because one of the conditions of application is they ask for risky ideas and you don't require any evidence, preliminary evidence. They just want big, broad ideas. They want to tap into the anarchic creativity of Silicon Valley, and they don't believe in the impossible. So this is a very exciting prospect.
And this is also, I had a little read of stuff, you know, to go, you're never going to get this nutty idea up with any reputable medical science thing who needs lots of evidence to justify their spending, but maybe it's brilliant, and this funding can get you to the point where those people will recognize you.
Exactly.
So that's cool.
It is cool.
Okay.
It is cool.
Okay. What were the ideas?
Okay, so... But I think the thing, it does raise some interesting questions about methods and about ethics, okay? And where Khaleesi comes in is that's our third wave of biological control against the rabbit, right? We had myxomatosis in the 1950s, first Khaleesi virus 1995. And what we get is wherever you get genetic variation in any organism, if any sign of, as soon as you try and eradicate it, or reduce that population, it puts enormous selection pressure on that population to come up with an alternative. So evolution's at work and up it pops, and that occurs in all diseases and all organisms. So one of the things they're really promising is that they can break out of that arms race that we're used to, and possibly they can, which is very exciting. But one of the techniques they're going to use is called gene editing. And gene editing offers the promise of being able to get right in deep and change the genetic composition and offer cure for diseases. But it also is a double-edged sword because it also offers the opportunity for enhancement. So let's say you're dealing with a muscle-wasting disease. Well, why not dial it up 10, 20%? Why not create someone who's even stronger?
And this is going to become the story of medicine.
It is.
So I was reading a book, Homo Deus, and he was essentially saying we can manage most of the diseases and we can basically manage famine. We can manage all the things that people have struggled with.
Yeah.
So now, surely it's about improvement.
This is a book by Yuval Harari.
Yeah.
Yeah, he puts a very interesting argument, doesn't he?
It's powerful.
Because what he's saying is biotechnology has the risk, it's not inevitable, the risk of greater inequality than we have ever seen. And why does he say that? Because biotech could be taken to upgrade the healthy rather than heal the sick. Okay.
And Silicon Valley people are obsessed about immortality.
And achieving the impossible. So look, let's not get too terrified, but here's the argument that he makes, which is interesting. There was an argument for general good public health in the 20th century because the vast majority of the population were economically active and every economy depended on them. His argument is, as we go into the 21st century and beyond, we have much more of our work is done by machines. And what he paints the picture is, it's not an inevitability, it's not a prophecy, but it's a possibility that we end up with a super elite and then the rest. Now, the rest, if they're not economically active, it's in no particular people's interests to have universal public health. So the idea of a global norm for health, which is the remit of WHO and most medical institutions the world over, the economics changes. And where you've got...
Well, the whole idea changes because he's saying, oh, well, if you're sick, we'll make sure we'll get you back to normal.
Yeah.
But if you can improve people genetically, well, then what? There's no normal anymore. You just go, well, you can be as amazing as you can afford.
Yeah. Now, I'm not
and
saying...
And why should the state pay for everyone to be amazing? And if the state's paying, how amazing should the state pay for people to be?
And that's not an inevitability of what's happening, but it raises the possibility. Because here we've got a big dollop of money, $3 billion in medical funding. Mm. Now, we've seen in other areas where governments have withdrawn for various good reasons. They've got a lot of things to spend money on and, say, nature conservation. They've withdrawn a bit and the private sector has moved in. And that's all been a good story. The Nature Conservancy is now the biggest private landholder in the United States. And they do excellent work. They do also some brilliant science. But imagine if that happened in medical research. Now, the National Institute for Health in the United States is at the moment 10 times bigger than Chan Zuckerberg. But if you add the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and various other Silicon Valley people who are putting billions of dollars into ending disease and curing cancer, what if that starts to dictate policy? What if governments withdraw? We haven't seen the budget, but if there's going to be $1 trillion in infrastructure and a huge boost to military expenditure, what tends to drop off? Discretionary spending on R&D. So, you know, I read Yuval Harari's thesis and I thought, that's a bit outlandish, really. And then you pick up these two press releases and you realise it's not inevitable, but it is possible. And power is shifting from humans to algorithms, you know, and from governments to the cloud. That's the reality. But what I find interesting is it's not a very optimistic thesis, is it? You've read it.
Well, it's really confronting thesis to say, because what he comes down to in the end is, well, we had the idea that we're God's chosen people and we have a soul and so we're better than all the animals and we're in charge and important, but we're all the same. And then we're like, okay, well, we can't really prove the soul scientifically. We've struggled to do that. And then humanism said, but we have a self.
Yeah.
And that's very special and important and we have them and animals don't have them, so it's fine to carry on eating them and we're all special and we're all the same. Mm. And science has completely failed to find that or do anything much about that. Either really with this, it's really not there. And so at that point, you just have a problem, A, differentiating ourselves from the animals that we farm and eat and treat quite poorly compared to how we're supposed to treat people. And then you go, well, what's the basis? And if you've just got the most money, then you win.
Yeah. And
so that is a bit spooky. And as these governments are doing these universal income experiments in Canada and Finland, going, oh, that's very hopeful. You go, not really, because if you're just paying all these people and there isn't really work for them and they're not productive, who are they?
What I find interesting is when someone asked him, so what do we do about it?
Yeah.
And one thing he said is, well, acquiring knowledge is not that important anymore as emotional resilience. In other words, people have to be prepared to adapt to these sorts of changes. So the best thing you could do for your children would be a good education and acquiring knowledge skills. While that's important, there are so many ways of accessing that. It's understanding those principles are important, but even more important, he says, is emotional resilience. And part of that is critical thinking and being able to see these trends. Now, I'm not impugning these big foundations and suggesting that they are evil incarnate and they're intentionally directing this, but what I found interesting is something he wrote about before this was all announced, you could see how it could happen if we're not alert to it.
The projects themselves that have come up in this funding, I mean, are they good projects? Are they interesting projects?
Well, the two that you can find on the website look really interesting. One is a cell library, so understanding all the millions of different cells and differentiations. So it's really like having an encyclopedia of human cells. And the other one is to do with infectious disease. But if you look at their priorities, the big things they say they're going to tackle are heart disease, cancer, and neurological diseases, which in general are diseases of the West and of affluence.
So the World Economic Forum have just put an article out called Three Ways to Build Stronger and Fairer Societies. One, support gender equality. They're talking about child brides particularly and outlawing that, otherwise 140 million girls will be child brides by 2020. Two, advocate for free and fair access to justice. And three, protect minority rights. Mm. There's not much about neurological disease in that, is there?
No, and that's been the history of the 20th century, to close those gaps. Mm. And all he's saying is be alert that there are the opportunities now exist for them to be widened. But you don't need gene editing and high technology to cure 90% of preventable deaths which occur in the developing world. What you need is nurses, midwives, community health workers. Now, that's not saying
that jobs for women. Well, there's nothing attractive about funding that.
That's not to say we don't need this blue sky research.
Yeah.
But the claim that this will end disease in our children's lifetime, there are things that could be done now and aren't.
Where do the rabbits come in? Ted Lefroy, it's 13 to 7.
Okay, here's where the rabbits
come
in.
2.5 minutes.
Okay.
Now, are you listening? Watch Ted tie this one up. This will be good.
Well, we're on our third wave of biological control. Okay, so when myxomatosis came in, a lot of people thought, that's it. Down go the rabbits.
Bunnies are dunny.
They went from 600 million down to 100 million, and lo and behold, somewhere in that rabbit population was a mutant that was resistant to the myxoma virus, and those genes spread throughout the population, and before you know it, bang, they're back up to 200 or 300 million by 1995. Bring in Khaleesi virus. It's a never-ending contest with evolution and natural selection. Now, these people are promising they can break that. Maybe they can, but there are lessons in everything, even the cold virus. Why do we have to go and have shots every winter? Because the virus will find a way to hide from the vaccine. So, in other words, I don't think we can get out of that. That's evolution.